Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with an audio adaptation of frightening fiction about menacing moves. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley, and tonight and every other Wednesday night, I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of Tim Ritter is none other than your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley. Now, get your ticket ready, take your seat in our theater of the minds, and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our tale this evening is written by Tim Ritter and performed by Paul J. McSorley. In it, we meet a new man living in a new place, which can be hard at any age, and accompany him on his journey to make the town his own. Now, without further ado, I present to you, Marked. When I decided to call it quits on the proverbial rat race and move to the Ozarks Hill Country of southwest Missouri, I could have never guessed what awaited me. Just a wide spot in the road, the tiny hamlet of Thermal Springs existed on the verge of being a ghost town, the lonely remains of a once flourishing community that originally owed its existence to a local hot mineral water source. The spring reportedly dried up when a couple of greedy aldermen decided to try to get more water flow, courtesy of a few sticks of dynamite. In their misbegotten efforts to further develop the town, they blew out the bottom of the water table, and almost overnight the community died. No spring, no visitors. The town's structures decayed and fell, and eventually the area just became known as Thermal. A few old structures from the little settlement's lively past still stood, but just barely. Half a dozen houses and mobile homes, each desperately in need of a fresh coat of paint, lined the dusty gravel road through what Thermal used to be, indicating some folks still scratched out a life there. Most of the dwellings, with old cars and mounds of junk in their yards, stood as lonely reminders that a thriving community once inhabited the overgrown fields lining the main road. The structure that originally housed the post office still stood, though with its rotting boards and leaning disposition, it was clearly just one windstorm away from being flattened. Trees grew in the middle of the foundation where the hotel once welcomed dozens of visitors every day. Each sunrise looked promising as another chance for the remains of the town, but each sunset cast lonesome, dismal shadows as doors locked and drapes were drawn. The only real sign of life in Thermal was the Gibbons Grocery, a small vintage 1940s general store with two old gas pumps outside. If a gallon of milk and a loaf of bread was all one needed, Gibbons was sufficient. Otherwise, a 30-minute drive to nearby Cassville was required for a full-blown grocery run or dinner at a cafe. None of the locals knew what to think when I moved into Thermal's old abandoned schoolhouse on 60 acres and began renovating the wooden building into living quarters. While still in Michigan, I was intrigued when I noticed it in the Country Real Estate magazine. Upon making my first trip to the area to see the old schoolhouse, as well as Thermal itself, I couldn't help but feel it was the singular bright spot in the county. The schoolhouse stood tall and proud, about 300 feet from the main road, situated on the western edge of an open 20 acres of land, with another 40 wooded acres adjacent. The distinct sunken driveway, formed from the hundreds of horse-drawn carts which traveled its path over countless decades, reminded me of what must have been scores of children who lived too far away to walk. Surrounded by massive old oak and hickory trees spaced about 25 feet apart, the old schoolhouse had entry doors on the front and back, with two large double-hung windows on each of the four walls. Any section of wall that didn't have a window contained a chalkboard, some in better condition than others. Near the middle of the single large room stood the original cast-iron wood-fired stove used to heat the place. Standing nearly as tall as me, it seemed grossly oversized for the task of providing warmth. Nonetheless, I was happy to discover it to be in good order, as I intended to let it do its job when cold weather prevailed. I bought the place that very day. I don't wish to give the impression of being overly blessed with money to buy and fix up the old building. On the contrary, I had just enough to get by for a while. Upon the death of my mother, my last living relative, my inheritance amounted to not much more than a few thousand dollars and a full set of genuine silver flatware, of which my mother had been very proud. A wedding gift from her grandmother, who first acquired it when she got married back in the late 1800s. I found the set to be in excellent condition, still in its original cherry wood box. The sale of my home in Michigan funded the purchase of this wonderful place in Thermal. I took possession of the old schoolhouse in late August, during a hot, dry spell, several weeks before the coming of autumn rains. I didn't have a lot of furniture when I bought the place, so it was a fairly easy task to move in and begin to set things up. I put my bed in the northeast corner of the room with my head against the east wall near the window. My dresser was placed on the other side of the window, and anything that needed to be hung up, which amounted to three shirts and a suit for which I had no use, hung just fine on four nails on the wall. The old original sideboard, still in excellent condition, served as a decent pantry, and I figured my mother wouldn't mind if I stored her silver flatware set on the bottom shelf. Once aptly settled, I commenced work on the schoolhouse, making sure it was ready for winter months. As would be the case in any small town, the news spread quickly through Thermal that the man who bought the old schoolhouse was making improvements. Soon, three old guys from the village began coming, albeit uninvited, to watch me work. Every weekday morning, if the weather cooperated, these colorful fellows arrived at the same time, about 8:30. I could hear them talking as they turned into my driveway. Each old codger carried his own folding chair, which they set up on whatever side of the building I happened to be working. They'd argue for several minutes about who would sit where, then settle in to watch me. The first guy was Ed. Nearly bald and not a tooth in his head, Ed was a veteran of the Second World War. He liked wearing an old dirty hat with airborne stitched into it. I knew enough about paratroopers to know that if he indeed served in the airborne, Ed was a badass in his day. Now he was a shriveled up little old man who liked to talk. I pretty much instantly liked Ed. The second old geezer was Herman, taller than Ed but just as thin. He liked letting you know he too served in the Second World War, as well as Korea. His ratty old green ball cap didn't have anything stitched in it about the army. Instead, it proudly displayed the emblem for his favorite brand of lawnmower. Rounding out the trio of gawkers was Earl. Never serving in the military, Earl was a stooped-over retired accountant with a mind like a steel trap. He was quiet most of the time, but when he spoke, the other two stopped talking to listen. One day they found out I was from Michigan, so suddenly I was called Yank. Apparently to them, that moniker automatically meant I didn't know my ass from a hole in the ground. Then they really wanted to stop by and watch me work so that they could critique my progress. One evening, when my work dragged on late, well after dusk, the four of us heard animals sounding off in the hills to the south, across the hollow where Rockhouse Creek meandered through the boulder-strewn lowlands. It started with a singular low howl, guttural and several seconds in length. Then one yip, then another, then several more, each high-pitched. It ended up sounding like a frenzied collection of yips, barks, and cries. "Sounds like a bunch of coyotes across the holler," I said without looking up. Those aren't coyotes, Yank. They're wolves, Earl commented. I raised my head and made eye contact with him. I didn't think wolves had a high-pitched yip like that.
They're wolves, all right, Herman said, looking toward the holler. I've heard them a bunch of times. Don't be fooled now.
Better listen closely in case they start sounding their approach, Earl spoke up. Ed and Herman turned and looked at Earl, then back at me. Approach? I questioned. Never heard of coyotes, I mean wolves, getting very close to people. It's different here, Earl said. Not that many of us here. They're a little braver, and if you're old like us boys here, you're easy pickings for a bunch of them.
Yep, speaking of which, we better get going,
Herman said as he slowly rose from his seat and stretched.
I got a little ways to walk, and I'm not any faster than you two old codgers.
The other two spectators stood up and stretched for a moment as the yips and howls continued, then gathered up their folding chairs and started walking away.
Wait a minute, I called after them. You know, I like to take walks after dark. I did it all the time back up in Michigan. Are you guys saying I could be in danger if I did that here?
The three men looked at each other briefly, then back at me.
Do you have a lantern?
Ed asked.
Yes, I've got several. My favorite is an old kerosene lantern. It was my father's.
That'll work, Herman answered. Do you have a good stick, like a good hickory stick, to carry with you when you walk?
I chuckled. This property is full of hickory trees. I'm sure I could scrounge one up. Herman's face never changed and apparently never saw any humor in my response.
You're gonna need it, Yank. Especially if they get a little hungry, and there's several of them. You might want to sharpen it a bit, too, in case you have to poke one to get it away from you.
I agreed with a grin as Earl walked up to me. Don't think this is anything funny, son. We're serious. Ed and Herman stopped talking and turned to listen to Earl. If you think you need to take a walk around dark, you heed what we say. Old Mrs. Briller down the holler, Earl pointed off to the northeast as he spoke. She lost one of her boys to wolves one night. He was in pieces when they found him the next day, and he was about your size, so pay attention.
All right, I appreciate the advice.
I nodded, trying to be more serious as he turned to join the other two.
Good night, Yank,
they called out as they slowly made their way along the sunken driveway to the main road. As the last man disappeared from sight, the wolves continued making noise. They do sound closer, I thought to myself as I walked inside, locking the door behind me. That night, as I lay in bed with the windows open, I listened closely for any sounds near the old schoolhouse. Hearing none, I eventually drifted off to sleep. The next day, a Saturday, found me 10 feet off the ground, confined to a ladder as I worked to repair the old soffit on the north side of the schoolhouse. Being a Saturday with a slight threat of rain, my three critics had elected to stay home. Towards sunset, as the colors around me began to deepen, I began thinking about calling it a day.
Sure does look nice up there.
I jumped as the sound of a female voice startled me. I turned quickly to see a short, thin old lady, hands on her hips, staring up at me. She was a sight to behold. Her hair, gray and wiry, seemed to sprout in every direction from her head. Her weather-beaten face bore a multitude of wrinkles that testified to a life of hardship. Her dress was a simple piece of homespun work, and she wore old hard-sole shoes on her feet, the kind I imagined the teacher wore in the heyday of the schoolhouse.
"Thank you, ma'am," I called out as I descended the ladder. "It's coming along."
"I didn't mean to interrupt you," she said as she inched a little closer. "But I hadn't the chance to come by and introduce myself till now. I'm Mrs. Higgins."
I wiped my hands quickly with the rag from my pocket, then reached out to be neighborly.
"Very pleased to make your acquaintance, Mrs. Higgins. I'm Billy, Billy Horner."
"So pleased to meet you, Billy."
Handshake was brief, and she quickly tucked her hand back into the pocket of her dress. For the first time, I noticed her necklace.
on a rough leather string were odd little shapes that were smooth and off-white in color, with a hole drilled in the middle for the string. They were like shells, but not quite. I caught myself staring and changed my gaze to her smiling face.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I live just down the road to the east toward the holler, she continued. And I heard about all the wonderful things you are doing for this old schoolhouse. I went to school here, you know.
You don't say.
Oh, yes. All 12 grades right here in this building. We would play and sing and dance and practice our audition tables. Me and my pal Joyce chased Tommy Briller.
Oh, yes, I've heard the name Briller, I interrupted. Any relation to that boy that I heard died one night?
Yes.
Mrs. Higgins' smile suddenly left her face.
Tommy Briller was his daddy. Joyce married him. Tommy ran off after the baby was born. Seth Briller was their boy you speak of. Of course, it's not polite to speak ill of the dead, but...
Mrs. Higgins looked down.
But what?
Couldn't help but want to hear more.
Seth Briller was trouble. Nothing but trouble. That boy crossed my path a bunch of times. Too many, but yes. One night...
Across the hollow, the wolves again started their evening serenade. Mrs. Higgins turned slightly, listening. I detected a slight grin on her face.
They sound hungry tonight,
she said quietly.
What?
I wasn't sure I heard her right. She turned back to me and smiled sweetly as the sound of the wolves got louder.
Well, I guess I'd best be on my way. Don't want to get caught out after dark, you know. It's awfully nice to meet you, Mr. Horner, and I look forward to seeing you again sometime.
Nice to meet you too, Mrs. Higgins. Stop by any time.
Oh, I will.
She called out over her shoulder as she raised her right arm and flicked her wrist. I leaned over to pick up the rag from my hands and noticed the sound of the wolves had stopped. As a matter of fact, they didn't sound off again the rest of the evening. The next day, I noticed my stock of groceries had dwindled to the point that a trip to Cassville was necessary. So, without taking notice of my near-empty gas tank, I headed to town for provisions. It wasn't until I was a few miles from Thermal that I noticed the low fuel light on my dash was illuminated, and I wondered how long it had been glowing and how long the needle on my gas gauge showed nearly empty.
Damn, Horner, you gotta pay more attention to stuff down here, I fussed at myself. I must have been on fumes as I turned into the parking lot for Gibbons Grocery. Fortunately, no one was gassing up at the 1970s era pumps, so I pulled in and filled up the tank. Opening the door to the old building so that I could pay for my gas, I nearly knocked over Mrs. Higgins. We both let out a yell and she jumped, causing the half-gallon bottle of milk to fall out of her arms, shattering on the floor and spraying milk everywhere, including on both of us.
Oh, Mrs. Higgins, I'm so sorry. Are you all right? I could feel my face turning red from embarrassment.
Oh, dear, she fussed as she stepped away from the broken glass. Mr. Horner, my goodness, you frightened me. Now look at this mess all over the floor.
It's okay, Mrs. Higgins. The teenager on duty smiled as he ran over with a couple of towels. Don't worry about this mess. I'll get it cleaned up. You just go pick out another bottle of milk and don't think another thing of it.
I'll have to wash this dress again or it'll smell like spoiled milk.
She turned and shook her finger at me.
You, young man, need to slow down. Around here, we don't move as fast as you people from wherever you came from.
I came from Michigan, ma'am, and I'm dreadfully sorry about all of this. She shook her finger at me again and stomped out the door. I leaned down to help the grocer pick up the broken glass.
I guess I really made her mad, I chuckled.
Yeah, the teenager said as he looked up to me. I wouldn't want that old bat mad at me. I've heard she can get pretty mean. Together, we got the mess cleaned up, I made sure to pay for Mrs. Higgins' second bottle of milk when I settled up for my gas. Happy to have enough groceries for a while, my car's full tank, I headed home to put in a little more time on the renovation of the schoolhouse. That evening, the wolves were quiet, though I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched from somewhere across the hollow. That evening, after all the excitement of the day, I believe I fell asleep before my head hit the pillow. At one point in the middle of the night, my eyes popped open as I heard the distinct sound of scratching, short but persistent scratching on the other side of the wall. Half awake, I laid there and listened as I felt a cool breeze blow across me thanks to the open windows. Must be a branch from the old tree that's still too long, rubbing against the house in the breeze. I'd better trim it tomorrow. Don't want it to rub through the paint. I drifted back to sleep. The next morning, I got up early, had my normal breakfast of scrambled eggs, toast, and coffee, then stepped outside to start working. Gotta be sure to cut off that branch rubbing against the house, I muttered to myself, head down as I walked. Turning the corner, I stopped dead in my tracks. The oak tree, easily over 100 years old with a trunk as big as a tractor tire, stood majestically about 25 feet from the house. The tree had been meticulously trimmed over the decades, and the lowest branches cascaded about 10 feet over the rooftop. It was impossible for a branch to have been making the scratching sound I heard. I walked quickly over to the wall where the noise seemed to come from. I ran my fingers along the rough wall, noticing the chipping paint easily detectable against my fingertips. About midway down the wall, I found two long scratches going down from right to left at an angle. I ran my fingers along the contours. They weren't deep, just enough to scratch off some loose paint. I chuckled, shaking my head. Good Lord, some kind of handyman I am. I must have accidentally scratched this area at some point, probably with my ladder or something. Guess I was dreaming about those sounds last night. I still had part of a can of white exterior paint left over, so I touched up over the scratches, finishing just as my three spectators started walking toward me along the driveway. It never occurred to me to bring up the scratches. That evening, as I brought my work to a close with the sun beginning to set, the wolves started making noise again from the woods across the river.
"Do you have your hickory stick cut yet, Yank?" Earl asked.
"Nope, but I'll make one tomorrow."
"Better get it done, son. The sooner the better."
"Son? Am I now son instead of Yank?"
"Good night, Yank,"
the three called out as they packed up their chairs and left. Apparently, I'm still Yank, I sighed, chuckling as I watched the old men walk stiffly toward the road. That night, I couldn't seem to get comfortable enough to drift off to sleep. Tossing and turning, I tried to settle down and rest, but I just couldn't clear my mind.
"Good stick of hickory. Get it done sooner than later. We're serious."
"Pure bullshit." My quiet muttering was interrupted by a sound from outside the window by my bed. Trying to figure out the sound, I leaned up on my elbow and closed my eyes to listen. It sounded like a muffled woof, but not quite like a dog would sound. Then I heard another sound. Scratching. It wasn't just a dream after all. With my windows open, I decided against getting out of bed to check closer. If it was a dog or a wolf, I didn't like the idea of just a flimsy screen between me and the animal. So instead, I simply laid there listening. After a couple of minutes, the scratching ended and I heard no more muffled noises. I didn't move for quite some time, trying to figure out what the critter outside my window could have been. Eventually, I managed to slip off to sleep. The next morning, I awoke with the words of the old men still echoing through my head. "A good stick of hickory," I muttered to myself as I washed my face in the basin. Grabbing my axe, I stepped out the door, intending to find the right stick. Adjacent to the open 20 acres upon which the schoolhouse stood, 40 wooded acres sprawled out to the west, full of oak, hickory, and walnut trees. I knew I would find the right branch for what I needed in that patch of woods. As I stepped out onto the porch, I didn't bother looking down. That morning, a beautiful sunrise, catching the mist as it rose off Rockhouse Creek, had my full attention. Two paces from the door, I stepped in something that squished under my right boot. I looked down to discover a huge pile of shit that something left for me on the porch.
Jesus, are you kidding me?
I yelled as the smell hit my nose.
What kind of monstrosity had to go that bad? And why the hell did it pick my porch?
After carefully going down the steps on my left leg, with my right leg comically held up in the air in hopes I wouldn't track the odoriferous present all over the place, I wiped my right boot in the grass to get all the crap off the bottom, then walked over to the shed to get a shovel, muttering to myself the whole way.
Just trying to get out this morning to get a good stick of hickory, and I'm greeted by a pile of shit. By God, whoever did that must have felt better afterwards. Probably was holding that one since October. October two frickin' years ago.
My mutterings continued till I had the pile scooped up and dumped in the woods.
Goddamn thing, I sure hope that's the only time I find a present like that.
Satisfied to have the mess removed but still irritated about it, I headed into the woods to find the right hickory branch. My search didn't really take all that long, as the woods offered plenty of solid branches, most of a pretty good size. After about 15 minutes and 20 trees, I found the hickory branch I wanted to cut. Roughly 2 inches in diameter with the bark on and pretty straight. So I chopped it off the tree and pulled it back to the schoolhouse. Settling into the wooden chair I kept for porch sitting, I sawed the stick to a 4-foot length, then grabbed my old pocket knife and began to scrape the bark away. After getting the surface fairly clean, I took one end and began to whittle, working at it until I had a good point that extended back about 4 inches to the original diameter.
Damn varmints will feel that sticking into them, I muttered to myself, content to have only spent a couple of hours to make my wolf stick. I still think they sound like coyotes instead of wolves.
Within an hour, my three old spectators were back with their chairs, waiting to see what I planned to tackle today. Once they were settled and ready to watch, I brought my wolf stick to them to get their approval. Ed gave it a thorough examination.
Not bad, Yank. You got her good and clean, and I like this point you put on it.
He nodded as he passed the stick to Herman, who instantly poked his finger against the pointed end.
Yeah, that's not bad, he said. If you ever have to use it, you'll have to sharpen it again the next day, you know.
He nodded and passed it to Earl.
Not bad, Yank, not bad. Bet Mrs. Briller's boy wished he had one like this that night.
Hey, speaking of Mrs. Briller and her boy, I met Mrs. Higgins on Saturday. I guess she and Mrs. Briller are friends. I grinned, happy to announce I met another living soul in thermal.
Enemies is more like it, Earl said as he continued examining the stick. Both those women wanted to marry Briller. Joyce got him. Edna never forgave her.
Edna is Mrs. Higgins' first name? She never said.
Typical for that old witch. Stay clear of her, Yank.
Ed spoke up.
Really?
I chuckled.
I'm surprised to be afraid of that little old lady.
Laugh all you want, Yank. She's trouble. Some people are just trouble. She's one of them.
Earl handed the stick back to me and nodded, then took a puff off his cigar. Yeah, I think I managed to make her mad. I ran into her at Gibbon's store. We nearly ran over each other and she ended up dropping her bottle of milk. It went everywhere. I apologized, but she shook her bony finger in my face and seemed pretty upset.
Earl scowled.
She's trouble, Yank. Just remember that.
Tell you what, fellas, speaking of trouble, I had the biggest pile of shit on my porch this morning. I laughed after taking the stick back from Earl. All three men glanced quickly at each other.
Whatever did that sure had been holding it a while,
I continued, shaking my head. The three men just stared at me.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Son, you better keep a close eye, Ed said
his face looking more pale than normal.
I wouldn't go out after dark and try that stick out. Not tonight. Not for a few nights.
Several nights? Herman chimed in. What are you talking about?
That pile of shit was a sign.
Ed pointed his gnarled up finger at me.
You've been marked.
Marked? I laughed. Marked by who?
Not who, Earl spoke up, but what?
I looked at Ed, then Earl, and Herman. No one said a word. I could hear my heart pounding in my ears as the three of them stared at me without saying a word. Finally, Ed spoke up.
There are things in these woods, Yank.
All right, you guys, enough trying to scare the outsider. I laughed, waving them off. No coyote or wolf could take a dump that huge. It would have taken about six of them to have made that big of a mess, trust me.
You don't know how big it was.
Ed!
Herman shouted. Ed turned to Herman and Earl. Both men glared disapprovingly at him.
I'm just telling you, don't take a walk tonight.
Ed said, lowering his head as he turned back toward me. You know, all this talk reminds me. Something was scratching the wall outside my window last night. And it happened the night before last, too. I just painted over the scratches yesterday. I meant to look at that spot again today to see what the scratches look like. Ed glanced at Herman, then Earl.
Show us, they said together as they got up from their chairs.
I took them around to the side of the house, and sure enough, there were two scratches again near my window. I ran my fingers along the scratches as the old men watched. After a long silence, Earl was the first to speak.
Yank, be careful. The pile of shit and these scratches. You're marked for sure. Better keep a shotgun loaded.
Ed shook his head. Herman said nothing.
Okay, guys, whatever. I've got my stick and I'll load my gun. Now I want to get back to work on this place.
The three men walked in silence back to their chairs as I grabbed my ladder. Nothing more was said about the wolves throughout the rest of the day. They watched as I worked, pointed out any misstep or error I made, usually within a fraction of a second of me discovering it. The day wore into evening, and as the sun began to set, they gathered up their chairs as usual and began to leave.
Remember what I said,
Ed said as he brushed past me. I watched them leave, shook my head, and walked inside the schoolhouse to make dinner. At about 8 o'clock, the sun was nearly set, and I wanted to take a walk. The warnings of the old men rang in my ears, but I laughed it off.
I haven't been marked. That's silly. Some dummy decided to pull a prank on me. I'm going to walk the old path through these woods.
I lit my old lantern, put on my backpack, then grabbed my fine hickory stick and set out for a walk. When I bought the old schoolhouse property, the realtor told me about the old school trail and the fact that it meandered through the woods and covered most of the property. Back in the days of the schoolhouse actually being used for education, some area children used the trail to get there. Each surrounding homestead had its own path that linked up with the trail, which made it easy for kids to get to school. As I started out into the woods along the path, I imagined all the shenanigans that could have taken place amongst the trees and overgrown brush when the kids felt ornery. After about half an hour of walking, the woods grew substantially darker as the sun set behind the hills to the west. I was glad to have the lantern with me to illuminate the path. At once, I became aware of considerable yipping and howling. It sounded exactly the same as all the other nights, but closer, much closer. The hair on the back of my neck stood up as the noise got louder. I stopped in my tracks, put my head down, closed my eyes, and listened.
That's close, really close, between here and the schoolhouse, I said quietly as I listened to the continued chorus of yips.
As I closed my eyes, I became aware of the sound of leaves crunching. Many leaves crunching, like the sound of several feet coming at me very quickly. I reached down and opened up the lantern wick a little further, splashing brighter light around me. The crunching drew near. Suddenly, the sound grew quieter.
I still heard it as I heard nothing else. No wind, no other rustling, just the sound of those feet crunching more slowly. Slower still it approached. Then I saw it. Then a single it became them. I found myself facing 8 large wolves spread out in a line before me. Their heads were low, staring intently at me. I had seen photos and film footage of wolves before, but not like these, not this big. Easily 3 foot tall from paw to shoulder, these beasts were half my height. Their light-colored eyes, nearly white, were offset by their black fur. Seeing 8 pitch-black wolves with white eyes standing in a line in front of me, I wished I had listened to my 3 buddies and just stayed in for the night. I suddenly remembered a lesson from somewhere way back in my childhood. If you ever come face to face with a wild animal, don't let it see that you are afraid. Make yourself look large, show no fear. All right, you guys, I began to speak loudly with as deep a voice as I could muster. Are you jackasses the ones who took a collective crap on my porch? The beasts didn't flinch. Show no fear. Because I'd sure like to thank you for leaving me such a welcoming present. I'm still not sure it's all the way off my work boots. Still, the beasts didn't flinch. Make yourself look large. I wasn't sure where all this survival information in my head came from, but heeding the advice, I waved my arms, swinging the lantern and hickory stick, and I began to make roaring noises to the best of my ability. The wolf in the middle began to snarl. As his nose curled back and he showed me his teeth, saliva dripped from the sides of his mouth. I don't think so, mister, I yelled as I stuck my pointed hickory stick toward him. He flinched only a little, then looked at the other wolves. Within seconds, all 8 of them snarled at me, baring their teeth. Jesus, they are communicating. I tried to keep from showing the fear that was building up inside me. You've been marked. The old man's words hit me like a ton of bricks. Had these little bastards come up to my porch and all 8 of them taken a dump to mark where they planned to return tonight? All right, you little shits, I bellowed. You may have marked my porch thinking you were coming to get me tonight, but it's not going to happen. I've got this good stick of hickory, and you're each going to feel it if you come any closer. Now get out of here! You lose! Did my best to come up with some guttural roar that would scare them away. I took in a deep breath, leaned in toward them, and let loose a loud something that surprised even me. With all the lung capacity I had, I let that growl, scream, bellow, roar go for 10 solid seconds. The beasts stood there looking at me as I roared. When I was done and the last bit of air I could muster had been forced out, the middle wolf looked at me, looked at the others, and at once they began to slowly step back away from me, facing me the entire time. After a few steps, they stopped, then sat on their haunches about 20 feet away from me. Ha! I yelled after them. That's right. You mess with me, you're messing with all kinds of trouble. Just because I'm from Michigan doesn't mean I don't know how to ward off you bastards. I smiled and looked down at my good stick of hickory, pleased that I hadn't been forced to use it. Just then, behind my left ear, I felt the strangest thing. Not really a breeze, but more like a hot breath that would have come from someone or something standing right behind me. As I turned around, I heard a low, deep growl. There, standing a few inches from my face, was a beast. It stood on its hind legs, towering over me by a full 12 inches. Its feet and hands were like claws, but otherwise, it looked like a really big version of the 8 wolves that now sat and watched behind me. The beast stood before me, mouth open and dripping saliva, looking almost sadistically happy to have me at a disadvantage. After an agonizing second or two, the unbelievable happened. It spoke. I believe you were told to stay inside tonight, weren't you? I couldn't believe my ears.
As terror took a firm grip over me, I looked down at the neck of the beast. There, hanging around its neck, was a rough leather string where odd little shapes that were smooth and of an off-white color. My eyes widened as I realized who, or what, was standing in front of me.
Mrs. Higgins?
It laughed a low, demonic laugh.
That's right, Mr. Horner. You recognized my necklace. Would you like to know what these little pieces of white are in this necklace?
Somehow, in my horror, I managed to nod.
Souvenirs, Mr. Horner. Pieces of skull. You might say they are trophies.
The beast pointed at the last piece on the string.
This was Seth Briller's.
I looked down at the skull fragment and then back up into the beast's eyes.
I kind of figured you would make a tasty meal for me, sooner or later. You know, you really should slow down. Quit scaring little old ladies. I think you need to be taught a lesson. Who knows? I might add what's left of you to my necklace.
The beast reached up and wrapped her claw around my throat, tightening her grip as I struggled to breathe.
You might have to poke one to get it away from you.
My hickory stick, which I thankfully had not dropped in my terror, lay horizontal in my hand. Thinking quickly, I jabbed the sharp stick deep into the beast's abdomen. It grunted, then tightened its grip on my throat.
You silly fool! Haven't you been told that something like me can only be killed by a silver bullet?
Struggling to breathe, I managed to grin and choked out the words, "Look down!" The beast's look of anger and hate turned to shock and pain as it looked down. There, firmly strapped to my hickory stick and half buried in the beast's abdomen, was one of my mother's knives from her set of flatware. Silver flatware. Letting go of my throat, the beast stumbled backward. I drove the stick deeper into her gut as she fell to the ground.
I'm no fool, Mrs. Higgins. I knew something wasn't right here. Tonight I was prepared, hoping whatever was out here would take the bait.
She gasped only once. I pulled my backpack off my shoulders. Inside, as part of my plan, I packed a can of lighter fluid and some matches. After dousing her body into all the grass about a foot around her, I struck a match and let her burn. Turning around, I noticed the wolves were still sitting there, several feet away, looking at me and the flames. They had watched the entire scene unfold, though I must admit, in the horror of the moment, I completely forgot about them. The center wolf stepped toward me, stopping about a foot away. It then turned and looked at the other wolves, who slowly stepped forward as well, making a line like they did when they first confronted me. Unsure of what would happen next, I held my ground. Together, the wolves lowered their heads as if to acknowledge me and what I did, then raised them again and stared at me. I nodded slowly in return. Then, mustering up my courage, I knelt down in front of them. One by one, they came forward and nudged my shoulder with the tops of their heads, then ran off toward Rockhouse Creek Hollow, howling and yipping the entire way. I turned back around as what was left of Mrs. Higgins continued to burn with the silver knife and the singed remains of my hickory stick conspicuously sticking up. From that point on, I was no longer afraid to take walks near dusk or of any sounds I heard outside my window. The wolves now answered to me.
I hope you enjoyed Marked, as written by Tim Ritter and performed by Paul J. McSorley. You can find more of Tim Ritter in the darkest of shadows, holding his pen to paper tightly, or right here on our very own network. On to the shows. We have Scary Stories Told in the Dark airing twice a week. We also have Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. And Drew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some Southern down-home horror. And don't forget to check out Fear from the Heartland Archives, featuring more than 120 episodes. Speaking of Fear from the Heartland, let us be part of your spooky season. The horror never has to end. Check out episode 13 of season 1 titled Welcome to Helltown to marinate in that good old Halloween spirit. You won't be sorry that you did. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, chillingtalesfordarknights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.